It's time to get sexy, so watch Secular Sexuality live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/ytss and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callsex.
That's right, folks. It is time for another episode of Talk Heathen. Today is Sunday, November 6th, 2022, and I am your host, Secular Rarity, and joining me today is someone I am thrilled to be having with me. It's Adam L. Massery. How are you, Adam?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a fun show for us. Normally, we have a little bit more of a focus on Christianity and stuff, but we are excited to have on somebody that is as knowledgeable as you in Islam, because we always love to talk about all different religions. And just a reminder to everybody out there, if you disagree with what we're saying, well, that's okay, because Talk Heathen is a live call-in show, and we've actually got open lines, so you can just pick up your phone and call us at 512-991-9242, or you can even hit us up from your computer at tiny.cc/callth. So we've already got a couple of calls in the queue already, but again, folks, we got open lines, so go ahead and give us a call. Before we jump over to you, Adam, let me just remind everybody that Talk Heathen is a product of the Atheist Community of Austin, a 501c3 organization dedicated to the promotion of atheism, critical thinking, secular humanism, and the separation of religion and government. And there are a bunch of super great ways you can help us out here. You can support us on Patreon at tiny.cc/patreonth, and you might get your name read out on the show because we always read the top five patrons. So, and then just remember, look, please just go ahead and like that video real quick. It takes you 5 seconds. Subscribe to the channel, enable the notifications, and just say all the comments you want below, whether you like what we have to say or you don't. We love to hear it either way. And why not just share the video? It's really, really super easy. So you can also become a channel member. You just click join below the video. I think you can do it for as little as 99 cents a month, folks. And you get custom chat emotes, sweet, sweet chat emotes that you can just put all through the chat. And you help us out here at Talk Heathen and the ACA. And we absolutely appreciate that. And then finally, the last thing below the live chat, we have a fundraiser. 100% of those proceeds go directly to the ACA, and YouTube does not charge any fees whatsoever or take any cuts. So if you want to make sure that 100% of your donation goes here to the ACA, that is the easiest way to do it. But before we grab a call, Adam, there might be some folks out there for whatever reason that have not come across your awesome content. Would you tell us just a little bit kind of what you do and why you're here today, man?
Absolutely. So about 5 years ago, I started my Arabic YouTube channel, which basically the reason for starting the YouTube channel was to share my experience, and specifically in Arabic, these kind of things are not talked about often. So I wanted to share my thoughts and basically gather like-minded people. That's been my journey for 5 years now. My Arabic channel has reached 100,000 subscribers or 12 awesome. Million views, which kind of triggered me to start kind of similar content in English, because I found, as you said earlier, I found that there's a lot of critical thinking, criticism to Christianity and Judaism, but in English, there is not as much criticism to Islam.
Yeah.
And I thought that this is an area that is needed, especially that I'm a native Arabic speaker. So,
keep going.
And that's what triggered me to start Adam and Masri English channel. I hope you like it. I hope you will enjoy it. That's it.
Yeah, I've seen a good bit of your stuff in English, and I have greatly enjoyed it. And I think that brings up a really good point for me, because, you know, whenever I've engaged with you know, Islamist apologists or just individuals who are very, very devout when it comes to their Islamic faith. A lot of times I get the criticism that because I don't speak Arabic, I don't actually understand the message. And I guess my question for you is, how often do you feel that that rings true when you're reading through the Arabic and the English translations? Do you feel like they're pretty much getting the original message, or have they just totally, you know, corrupted it and perverted it and all of this stuff?
I think it's a ridiculous claim by Muslim apologists because, well, let's face it, you don't read Arabic, right? So you read the Quran through an English translation, and those who provided the English translation are Arabic speakers who fully understood the Quran, and they put it in English, which the language that you can read. So to claim that, you misunderstood the Quran because you don't speak Arabic, well, how about your scholar who translated this to English for me? So
that's a very, very good point. You know, these writings have been around for, I mean, quite a while now, a few hundred years at this point. You think if the English translation was so bad, they would have fixed it already, right?
And some of them are official English translation, like Sahih International, for instance. If I'm reading something, like I'm having an argument with you about a verse in the Quran and I'm using Sahih International, you can't come and tell me, well, you don't understand. This is your official English translation of the Quran. So where did it go wrong?
Right, right. And I hear this often, especially when it comes to women's rights that are laid out in the Islamic law or throughout the Quran. And oftentimes I get told that, hey, well, if you really understood the Arabic, you know, this would come off a little bit better. Do you have any examples or anything from the Quran that you could kind of point to that just maybe kind of debunks that myth? Or
do you want an extreme example or an
everyday? Oh, sure. Let's start off. Yeah, let's go hard from the beginning, Adam. Yeah, we don't mess around here.
So when it comes to women's rights, there is this particular verse that basically it says, those non-obedient women, those who you fear their arrogance, there are three levels to discipline them. First, try to advise them, talk to them. And second, deprive them from sexual intimacy. So basically leave them in bed alone. And the third one is strike them. Hmm. And that word in Arabic, fadribuhunna, which is the word strike them or hit them. In recent times, even I was told, oh, you don't understand Arabic. I'm like, really? I'm a native Arabic speaker. In fact, I didn't start speaking English until very recently. But anyway, that word, some modern people came with a completely new explanation to the word fadribuhunna, as in separate them or divorce them. It is so outrageous that you can twist. I see the argument and I see how they're taking the word out of ancient Arabic and trying to make a completely different sense to it. But when they do that, when you make the claim that, hang on, you don't understand Arabic, this word can be read in a completely different light, you're making another very important point. You're basically saying that throughout the last 1400 years of Islam, none of the Muslims ever and the Muslim scholars ever understood that meaning. It is not written in any of the tafsir or tradition of Islam. And you're coming centuries later today to tell me that this word can actually mean XYZ, which is you completely misunderstood. Well, that means God has done a terrible job on his part. Because you've got generations and hundreds of years that people understood strike them, fadribuhunna, as strike them, hit them. That's the common meaning. So that's one interesting example.
Yeah. And the Quran is clear, right? It's a clear book laid down for people of all languages to understand. And I don't know, I feel like I kind of understand it. It tells me to hit a woman that I fear disobedience from if advising her and not having sex with her doesn't work.
Exactly.
Which is, I feel like across the board, that's like bad. Like even the advice part is still kind of this like patriarchal kind of like, oh, you're not smart enough to figure this out on your own. Let me help you out on how to obey all of my commands. Like, yeah. So, hey, look, again, just a reminder, folks, this is a call-in show. We've got open lines. You just give us a call at 512-991-9242. If you think, hey, I don't understand, or maybe, you know, maybe Adam didn't give enough context for that terrible verse, I mean, you just give us a call and you set us straight. But hopefully we'll get some people here that have some good thoughts on you know, the Quran as a whole. But we've got a couple of calls, Adam. You wanna grab one and talk to somebody?
I would love to, yes.
Yeah, well, we are gonna go to the Caribbean first, and that is super cool for me. I don't know if I've ever talked to somebody on one of these shows from the Caribbean. So we've got Look, he, him. You have some interesting thoughts on Catholicism, I think. How are you?
Yes. Hi. Great. I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
Yeah.
Yes.
We are good. We are excited. You're here with Secular Rarity and Adam El Masri. What do you got for us today?
It's a claim about reliable best ways of to the truth. And when I came to the YouTube channel, I saw this question about a survey. And I say, well, maybe not the Quran, but the CCC would be a better one.
And what, for all of those at home, what is the CCC that you're referring to? Just so we're all on the same page.
Of the Catholic Church.
Yeah. Okay. What about this do you find to be reliable? Why do you find this particular method to be a good way to get to the truth?
Well, it has been tested throughout the years. So it has changed. It's not the same thing from the beginning, and it's pretty new compared to other texts that has been written in the 2000 years of Christianism or Catholicism. So it is more understandable and less ambiguous than the Bible itself, right? So when you are looking to move towards the truth, so we're talking a pathway to the truth, you want something that is not ambiguous, that doesn't leave room for interpretation. You talked about that just before I called. So yeah, that's why I think it is a more reliable way to the truth.
So give us an example. My background isn't Catholic. Adam's background isn't Catholic specifically either. Give us some example from this book of something that could be helpful for us, you know, all of those of us out here that are not Catholic. What are we missing that you guys have, I guess?
So I don't have one on my hand. I could maybe look it up on my
Well, that's okay. Let me try just shouting an example I can think of off the top of my head. So from my understanding, and I could be wrong on this, but I believe the term is called transubstantiation or something along those lines, about how bread, once being blessed by the priest and then eaten by the believer, actually turns into the flesh of Christ in essence, but not in actual form. Did I encapsulate that well? Did I kind of, is that something that you believe is true?
Yeah.
How would we demonstrate whether it's true or not? Because that's something that's in the CCC, I believe, is that's part of their main beliefs. And you said this is a good way to help us get towards truth. So how would that knowledge, like that statement, help us determine truth?
The difference between the transubstantiated bread and the non-transubstantiated bread cannot be perceived by our senses besides our ears or eyes. Well,
how do we perceive it? If we don't perceive it with our senses, how do we perceive it?
We hear the priest says that. We see him do the thing.
But that doesn't mean that the bread actually changes, right? Like I could say that this water bottle right here, I could make a whole speech about how it's actually, you know, I don't know, solid gold, but that doesn't mean that the water has changed, right? How would we know from the CCC what is in there that we could use to determine whether or not this bread actually transforms into the body of a dead Jewish guy from like 2000 years ago?
Yeah. So the transubstantiation, you said it yourself, the matter doesn't change, the materials of the thing that change, it's the substance of the thing that does change. And when you talk about transubstantiation, there is only transubstantiation in the Eucharist. There is nothing else that transubstantiates, right?
Why?
This word transubstantiation is only used to convey an idea when it comes to the Eucharist, the bread or the wine. Okay.
I mean,
there are tools to convey ideas And this idea of trust association is something that is that is a word that needs to convey an idea, meaning that it is different than what it was before.
But
it's not the same.
But would you, I'm going to ask one more question, then I want to pass it over to Adam because I want to hear some of his thoughts on this too. But I mean, do you see how there's a difference between just saying that I have an idea about something and that idea existing, right? Like me having a thought that this water is solid gold, but it not actually having any bearing on the actual situation itself, right? Does that make sense?
So like, yeah, the thing is the gold that you talk of is something that we can understand. It's a word that convey an idea that is different than the words transubstantiation or the body of Christ and blood of Christ. So it's the word gold that let's say that you say this water turns into Schumbluck. Schumbluck is the word that you just invented, and sure, it convey an idea, which is what this water turns into too, right?
Are you saying that transubstantiation doesn't actually happen in real life? Like bread doesn't actually change in any way whatsoever. It's just that we now think it does because we have this word that encapsulates a particular idea. Is that what you're saying, you mean? Because I would probably argue that the CCC disagrees with you on that.
We can read the CCC what the CCC says, but
well, I'm pretty sure the whole Eucharist is a big part of the Catholic Church. Like I don't need to go double check on that. So, real quick, let me throw it over to Adam. Adam, what actually, do you have any thoughts on this? Is this making sense to you, or am I way off base here?
The one when you say it actually changed, you are thinking of usually people atheists, they think of a change in matter. But you agree with me before at the beginning of this conversation that there is no change in matter. The materials, the atoms do not change.
So then what changes? Just the way that we're thinking about it? Because if that's the case, then what you're saying is that's just an idea and that's not in reality. You have to show that there's actually a connection between the thought in your head and the world around you. But hang on a second. We've been talking a bunch. Look, let's get Adam in on this. Adam, what are your thoughts on this? Did you come from a Catholic background or?
No, I came from a Coptic Orthodox background, which is very interesting because the Coptic Orthodox Church believe that, are we still connected?
I think. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm still listening.
The screen seemed to be frozen. In the Coptic Orthodox Church, we believe in the Eucharist that it transforms into the actual flesh and blood of Jesus Christ, and that's even before you consume it. So before the priest puts the bread in your mouth, you're actually taking a piece of Jesus' flesh. And we took it an extra step on that. So there has been this miracle rumor that was told generation after generation that there was one, pathologist, a Christian pathologist who went once to take the communion, the Holy Communion, and she was in pure doubt. So what she did is she took the flesh and the thing and she put it in a tube and she didn't actually swallow it, took it to the lab and went and examined that piece of bread. And she found under the microscope that there is, plasma and other things that suggests that this is an actual piece of skin or whatever. And then she turned blind after that for her doubts. And the moral of the story is it actually transforms, but you're not supposed to verify it. You're not, well, obviously, because she was stroked by God for her disbelief.
How do we
verify? Is it just an idea? Does it really transform into something else? And how do we know that it actually transforms?
That's exactly my thoughts, Adam. Yeah,
I can make any claim.
Yeah, me too.
On,
me too. And that's why I say that on the call,
and he said, "Well, if you say that this water bottle, instead of saying it turns into gold, it turns into sunblock." Well, how do I know that? There is only one way to verify that is to apply it on my skin and examine ultraviolet rays before and after. There has to be some examination to tell if something changes in its characteristics or not.
Yeah. So look, definitely, I think Adam and I are kind of coming from the same place. We need some type of verification. Yeah. So what would that method be that we would use?
Yeah. So there is no change in the atoms of the thing. Adams is talking about changing the atom or the way it is constructed. And you were talking about that at the end of our conversation, Sekler and me. So we have, in the Catholic Church, we don't have the matter that changed. The atoms will stay the same. If you pick the Eucharist that has been consecrated, you will still find bread as a tool to convey the.
So what changes then? If the matter itself doesn't change, then what changes? What's different about it?
The substance. The change occurs in a field where our senses do not. Perceive or cannot perceive, right?
Okay. Directly. So, if that's the case, if what you're saying is that something out there exists that is literally physically impossible for a human being to ever, in any way, shape, or form, have any experience or knowledge or anything like, how do you make a claim about it? If what you're saying is that there's no way to interact with it whatsoever as a person, how do you then start? There is a way to interact with it, just not through any of the standard senses that humans have.
There you go. So when you
what is that method?
There is a change in your body that happens. There is a change in the way you do or you act in the during week or the during day, the rest of the day, or those kind of things. There is a change that is happening to you. What I'm saying is that this change is not measurable by tools. It is measurable by observation, right?
Okay, so observation would be a tool, I would call it. I mean, maybe it's not the same as like a cell phone, but observation would definitely be a tool. But I thought you said earlier that you couldn't see it. I thought you said that you couldn't see any of this. Now it sounds like what you're saying is that people who take the Eucharist just start acting differently. Well, what if people that take the Eucharist turn out to just be assholes? What if they just start acting like a jerk? Did they just not take the right Eucharist? Did it not actually transform?
Well, no, it did have an effect on them, which is not the effect that is usually that's usually a fan.
Lead you to accepting this thing, if when it happens in the way that you've described, or literally the exact opposite, in both cases, you're still saying that the thing that you said works. But you just said there are times where people do take the Eucharist and it doesn't give them the same effects. So it doesn't really sound like that's a super great way to go about finding the truth, right? If both conclusions lead us to the same thing. Say again?
What is the truth that you're trying to find? We are talking about finding the truth. And I don't understand in this specific case of transubstantiation, what is the truth that you're trying to find?
It's pretty easy. When I say truth, what I'm talking about is something known as the correspondence theory, where basically a statement has to correspond to the world around it. If that statement and the world around it don't correspond, we don't consider that truth. So for instance, if somebody says, the reason we know that the Eucharist actually does change is because when people take it, they start acting like really good citizens. And then we find people that are acting like jerks, then that doesn't correspond, right?
It's not because what happens after that we know it does change. It's because the priest and the Catholic Church said so. It is something that is based.
But hang on, we're going back now, because we already talked about this and we already agreed on this earlier. We already agreed on this earlier that just because one of us says something about something doesn't make it so, that we need some type of verification. That was what Adam was talking about.
Beyond that, Secretary. We didn't agree on that. I'm sorry, but when
I do have gold in my water bottle, is what you're telling me.
Turning into
Have gold, or is it sunscreen?
I didn't agree with you because gold was something different than substance. The thing that changed the substance of the Eucharist changed. And
this water has magic powers because I just said a spell over top of it. So this water has magic powers now. Does that mean that this water has magic powers just because I said it? Or do we need some other way of verification?
Yeah, well, you need to be a reliable source.
I'm a super reliable source.
Trustworthy.
I'm incredibly trustworthy.
of that magical properties that you keep to the water. So,
so no verification, just trusting the fact that the person in front of you isn't lying. Is that what you're letting me know? Is that your the method for finding the truth with the catches like in catechism? Is that what you're saying? That because Pope John Paul II was the one that wrote it down, he's reliable and we trust him?
So when you find truth of, about anything, there is trust involved. When you think about the shape of the earth, you will be needed some kind of trust on the tools that you're using to measure what you're measuring. You will not be able to not trust anything. You will need some kind of trust somewhere along the line. So yes, trust is needed to find the truth, but that's not the truth, only the thing that is needed for the Catholic Church. It's for any kind of truth. You will need some kind of trust, trust on your senses, trust on those scientists that have discoveries, trust on the people.
Adam, do you feel that answers our objections?
What I'm saying right now is that there is a reliable source giving you information.
Adam, do you feel like the fact that you and I have to trust some things, like for instance, like we both exist, like reality is real and there are other people in it. Do you feel like that is a good objection to us, to what our arguments were today with the CCC?
I don't think so. Even when he, at the very last part, he was saying that you always need that trust, even when we're talking about the earth is being a globe or a flat earth or whatever, you have to trust. I was going to step into this exactly because you have some people you may trust immensely who will say, well, the earth is flat. And I have some people that I trust immensely and they say the earth is globe. So now I trust in a bunch and you trust in a bunch and who's got the truth here? Just because we're basing our argument on who we trust rather than is there a verifiable method that we can follow to, because obviously one or the other is wrong.
And Luke, we appreciate you giving us a call, and we're going to let you go because we do have some other calls. But again, we still have those open lines, people. So feel free to call us. We love having these conversations. I was in the exact same boat, Adam. I just kind of felt like we had, you know, we were at the same place where it was like, well, no. So it's not that they act good afterwards. It's that the priest said the thing. And it's like, well, yeah, but we agreed that like just because somebody says something doesn't mean that actually like physically changes it or anything. If it's not changing the matter, I don't understand what it's changing, honestly. What else is there, you guys? I mean,
if it doesn't have any impact afterwards, like what's the point of taking it?
That's a very good question, too.
Because I'm supposed to take this Eucharist, right? Why? Because it's supposed to do something. What is that something? And how do we verify that it is done?
Yeah. Yeah. If we don't, if at the end of the day, we're just trusting, right? We're just accepting what people are saying. That's going to lead us to just accepting all kinds of claims. And that's not a good way to truth. But hey, if you're out there again and you think maybe we got something wrong or maybe we just don't understand it, you know, hey, look, again, I'm not Catholic, so I don't know, you know, I don't understand sometimes, but let me get through some of these announcements and we'll grab some other calls. If you are out there, folks, and you are already shopping on Amazon, did you know you can actually support the ACA at no cost to you? All you got to do is visit tiny.cc/AmazonSmileACA and you designate the Atheist Community of Austin as your selected charity, and Amazon will donate a portion of their profit directly to the ACA. Literally doesn't cost you anything at all. So, and there is another really cool way that you can help us out and get something nice in return. The Talk Heathen merch store is back, and you can just visit tiny.cc/merchaca and you can get all the cool, super duper awesome Talk Heathen items like the t-shirts, the hoodies, the coffee mugs, the tote bags, the cell phone cases, the beanies. And if you've got other suggestions, we take those too. So I don't know if you guys have ever checked out the Secular Sexuality merch store, but they've got some pretty good stuff there too. So, but each store now has a feature, special, limited edition item every month. It's going to be gone at the end of the month. So you got to go check out all the stores for all the shows and grab grab that cool stuff. And if you really don't enjoy looking at my face or Adam's face, first off, you're objectively wrong. But second off, it's okay because the ACA has a channel that has all of the awesome shows here in audio podcast form only. So you can go check out tiny.cc/AENpodcast and you will just hear our wonderful voices and not see our wonderful faces, but that's fine. You know, we won't cry about it. I mean, I might, but anyway, you can also become a member of the Talk Heathen community in our fan run Facebook page at tiny.cc/FBTHG. There are lots of good people that are hanging out there. A wonderful group of people a wonderful group of fans that run it for us and is absolutely awesome. And if you have a chance, just go hang out there for a little bit. But man, what do you think? Is it time for another call, Adam? Are we ready for another person?
I think so.
All right. Well, yes. let's go down to Florida and we'll talk with Patrick. He, him. Patrick wants to ask, do we think agnosticism and atheism can lead to nihilism? So, Patrick, you're on with SR and Adam. How are you?
Hi. Yes, I'm doing pretty good. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, I think we've chatted before in the past, man. I'll be honest. I can answer this super duper quick. I would really love to know what Adam's thoughts are. But yeah, I'd say yes. But also, I kind of feel like anything can. I don't know that it's specific to agnosticism or atheism. But Adam, what are your thoughts, man? Do you think agnosticism and atheism can lead to nihilism?
I would like to know first what you mean by nihilism. So do you...
Like, to me, nihilism would mean this life would be just absolutely fruitless. Like, we live and die, and it means absolutely nothing at all. That's what I've been coming to lately. I'm like, okay, you know, I don't believe in a personal God, you know, so I don't believe someone's out there looking out for me. I guess I could pray to the universe as an agnostic and take the agnostic's wager there that says, well, maybe a God exists, so I might as well make a prayer. It can't hurt. You know, I don't know, but it's crazy to me. I think this life, if it's fruitless, then, you know, why do we even exist? Why even live? How do you find meaning in life?
So my take on that is I don't think agnosticism is can lead to nihilism because it's based in the we don't know what's beyond. So agnosticism is basically not taking any assertive stand in a way. It basically admits what we know and where we don't have the answers currently, maybe temporarily. And that is not to say that life is meaningful or meaningless. It's just we don't see any meaning beyond that point. So I don't think agnosticism specifically lead to nihilism. As for atheism, I think it could. And as you said earlier, I don't think it's only atheism. A lot of ideas can lead to nihilism. It, at the end of the day, I personally think that we give meaning to life, however, and whatever ideology or belief system we may embrace for that. But at the end of the day, it's through you as the filter, you give meaning to life and make the best of it. I don't think it is objective meaning. It is very subjective meaning to life.
Yeah, and I would totally agree with that, Adam, and say that, you know, generally when I'm talking about nihilism, the way that I think about it, Patrick, is more kind of in that sense where Adam was going, where it's not that individual momentary things don't matter, right? Like I have friends, I have family, like spending time with them matters to me, you know? Eating food when I'm hungry matters to me, right? Like if I really, really have to go to the bathroom, like that matters to me, right? But the idea that when my life is over, when everything's said and done for SR, right? And we're closing the book and the lights are turning out, there's not going to be any entity or any like objective marker that people can go back and like look at everything and be like, ah, yes, he definitely mattered here. And like, this was super important for all of existence and yada, yada. I think where we matter is locally, is with the people around us. And if we can make, you know, more of an impact on a larger scale, that's awesome. If, as long as it's, you know, for benefiting everybody and kind of, you know, that tide that rises all boats and stuff. But yeah, in general, I honestly find that to be a really cool thought because it means that I no longer have to be concerned about whether or not I'm doing what this, you know, all-powerful entity wants me to do, you know, whether that's God or the universe or Allah, whatever. Like Adam said, I kind of get to make that decision, and that makes me feel a lot more fulfilled and a lot more comforted. So, but we've shouted a lot at you, Patrick. Give us some thoughts here.
I think though that coming from like that secular humanist standpoint, like I think maybe your perspective, I don't want to straw man you, but it seems like you have more hope in humanity and that kind of thing. Like that wouldn't be a nihilistic perspective to me. Like I feel like I've been an unwanted nihilist lately. Like I'm like, is this life really fruitless? Is it like once we die, then we're soon erased? Then when the last person that remembers us forgets us or dies or whatever, or did it mean anything at all? I've really struggled with that. I don't know.
Why is it? It sounds like it's an upsetting thought for you. Why is it something that bothers you? The idea that after you're gone, nobody may remember you or any. Why does that upset you?
It's just like, that's what I'm saying. It goes back to the nihilism that says like your life really, did it have any meaning? And it seems like to me, no, not at all. And, you know, we're just like an insect to me. Here lately, I've been thinking about it. You know, we think so highly of ourselves as human beings, highly evolved. We're just the most intelligent thing we can see or think we are. You know, maybe the dolphins are smarter. We don't know. But seriously, though, you know, and not joking around, you know, I think we are like insects. And when we die, we live and die like a bug. We die like a bug. And that's the nihilism that's coming up. And I don't like it.
Yeah, but why is that upsetting to you? That's what, you know, when I first started kind of having these thoughts, because I think there are a lot of us that go through kind of a, you know, a more, whenever we're in that kind of deconstructing, deconverting, you know, rethinking our beliefs and stuff, a lot of us that step away from a religious belief have these kind of thoughts for a little bit. Some go a little bit more hardcore, some it doesn't really matter and they move on. But for me, when I really started investigating why I was uncomfortable with that thought, I came back to this very, very simple thing that I really do think applies to a lot of us is we really seem to like life, like for the most part, like more often than not, like we enjoy being alive because that's where we get to do all the coolest things that happen in life, right? Once you're dead, you don't get to have any more super cool experiences in this world at the very least. We can just put aside the question of whether or not there is anything extra after you die. I don't think there is, and I think there's really good reason to not believe that. But let's even just leave that on the table. At the very least, we accept that once we die here, our time is done, you know? And now we got to go on to this other thing. And for a lot of us, that other thing gives us comfort just because we really like this experience a lot. So for me, the idea that after I'm dead, you know, none of this really matters anymore, it doesn't bother me because the time that I am here is the best time that I'm going to be able to have. And if I don't take advantage of that, and I don't try my hardest to help other people when I can, then I'm missing it. Excuse me, I'm missing out on something here. And that's what's upsetting for me. The idea that after I'm gone and 100 years go by and nobody watches these videos or anything, like that doesn't affect me because I think about all the stuff that I maybe could have done better, you know? And again, that just kind of goes back to where Adam was talking about at the beginning, where like, hey, that it finally opens up that chance for us to say, hey, this is what matters to me. And I don't have to be concerned that, you know, me having sex before marriage is some, you know, grievous error by the universe or this all-knowing entity or something. Like, I don't have to be concerned about punishment afterwards for not spending, you know, five times a day facing Mecca and praying. I don't have to be concerned about that. I can instead use that time to go help a neighbor or call up a family member I haven't seen in a while. And yeah, maybe 100 years years from now, that phone call just doesn't mean jack shit to the world at large. But that's okay, because my mom really enjoyed that conversation, and we got to talk about stuff, you know? Before we throw it back to you, Patrick, let me get some more thoughts from Adam here. I talk too much. Yeah, Adam, I mean, does it bum you out, the thought that 100 years after you're gone, like, you know, you may not be remembered, or you may not have anything still here? Or how do you feel about that?
It doesn't bother me at all. And to be honest, I have two thoughts about this. One is the butterfly effect. Just because I do not comprehend my impact in this world, and I cannot measure it, whether I will be remembered or not, that doesn't mean I'm not leaving a footprint behind. And that footprint can be very impactful in 1,000 years from now. It's just it's a comforting thought. It's not what I'm trying to say is that the butterfly effect is not measurable. That's one thing. But what another comforting thought I have is, and I would ask this, I would put it in a question for Patrick. Are you bothered or troubled by the fact that you did not exist before you were born? Hmm. So basically, you're living in this life from, let's say, you're going to live 70, 80, 90, 100 years. You're living from 0 to 90, let's say. If you were not bothered by the fact that you did not exist before the 0, why are you so bothered that you do not exist after 90? So yeah. The before and after is the same. These are my two thoughts around this.
Yeah, very good. Very good point. Yeah, give us a shout back to us, Patrick.
I was thinking I'd send my ripple into the pond when he said that. I like that. Mm-hmm. You know, that does give a sense of hope, but... you know, suffice it to say, I wanted to say this to you guys, too, while I was thinking about it. Any idea of heaven would be a hell to me, and here's why. An infinite paradise with no pushback, no struggle.
Sounds boring.
No, it's all easy, it's all sunshine and rainbows every day. That would be a hell to me. Yeah. Heaven, the concept of heaven would be hell to me. Don't send me. I don't want to go. beyond that, I appreciate the pushback from atheists. I just really feel like agnosticism is the most true and correct way, but I think atheism is, even agnostic atheism is an overcorrection, because I don't see how you can make a claim either way about God as an agnostic since about age 8. I've returned to that. I like pantheism, but I can't be sure of pantheism, so I've got to return to the true default agnostic, no agnostic atheist, no agnostic theist, just agnostic without all of that.
Well, I think it's
just where I stand.
Yeah, and I think it's good that you've you know, you've actually been investigating, and you've been questioning these things and trying to you know, really look at them from a more critical lens, because I think that's just what we should all do. Even though I've, you know, said for a good few years now, like, hey, I don't believe in God, or pretty much any version that I've ever heard, I think they all fail somewhere. You know, but I still try to spend time investigating that and getting comments from religious folk or spiritual folk or pantheist or just whatever, because it is valuable to always, you know, question that. But Patrick, we're going to let you go, man. And we always appreciate you giving us a call. I think we oftentimes have pretty good calls. And I'm glad that you're investigating it. And hey, just keep investigating it. You know, it's not you don't have to be an atheist. You don't have to be an agnostic. You get to decide these things for yourself, because there's not some book written by some authority figure that tells us what we're supposed to do. And again, just for me, that's comforting. That's nice to know that, you know, when I do something that makes me feel good or makes others feel good, I'm doing that just because I want to make others feel good. And it's not about, oh, I'm going to have this punishment or anything. But yeah, definitely. There are some hardcore nihilists out there for sure. The good news is they don't matter either. So, right. But anyway, let me say some things here because they are important and I am contractually obligated to say them. So make sure after this episode, folks, make sure that you go check out the newest episode of the flagship show of the ACA, the nonprofits. That's right. It is the flagship show of the ACA, and that will air live at 3 p.m. Central Time today. And you can go check that out very easy at tiny.cc/YTNP. And guys, the atheist community of Austin wants you to know what is going on in our community. And for that, we have a really super easy way. We've got our updated website. All you got to do is head to www.atheist-community.org and you can learn all about the organization itself, policies, and even ways that you could get involved. We all volunteer here, every one of the hosts and, you know, so much of the crew and just so many people just donating their time. And if you enjoy what we do and you want to help out, we always need some people. So, and then just finally, we want to hear from you. We want to know what you liked, what you thought was effective, if you think we matter or not. That's nice too. And we always want to know what we could do better. So make sure if you have anything, just go ahead and shoot it over to us at tv@atheist-community.org. And we always appreciate that because we always want to make sure that we are making positive steps. So, but I need a break, Adam. I need just a break here. So while I go take that break, I want to remind everybody that this isn't the only show that the ACA puts on every week. See, there's the flagship show, The Nonprofits, which is right after this at 3 p.m. Central Time. Then you've got Secular Sexuality, Truth Wanted, The Atheist Experience, so many awesome shows. And I get it. Sometimes you're busy and you don't get to see them all. So if you missed any of the shows last week, here's a taste of what you want to go back and watch.
Thanks for coming in and joining us and I guess kind of helping us shake off the rust. It's been like a 3-year dry spell. So if right? I'm a little bit awkward, like, you know, don't, I promise this never happens.
Just kidding, folks. I'm not Bob Ross or Rob Koss or whatever. I'm objectively Dan and I've been in costume this entire time. I fooled you guys. Can you believe
what?
It? I know.
How could you?
We will pray, we will burn, we will celebrate Jesus and push back the forces of darkness on the year's most evil night. We are children of the light and we will not tolerate darkness. It's gone full on super Christian for this one, aren't it? It's amazing.
If something was to hit a bunch of people on their brain and they got aphasia, uh-oh, it would make sense that they were speaking to each other.
Is this the Three Stooges argument for the existence of God?
When you're having the conversation with somebody about agnosticism, that you're on the same page.
Right.
Well, I don't see what's so hard about it. Don't get hung up on that's words, Patrick.
You're right. I just...
Yeah, I know.
I like...
And we are back, folks. And just another awesome, awesome reminder. If you're free, I don't know what you're doing, but November 17th to the 20th, if you can be in the Austin area, you should consider joining us in the studio audience. That's right, at the ACA Free Thought Library for live broadcast of Secular Sexuality, Truth Wanted, Talk Heathen, and The Atheist Experience. That's right, guys. We are doing these at the end of every month. So if you can get out, that's November 17th to the 20th, come and hang with us. The doors open at 6 p.m. on Thursday and Friday and noon on Sunday. And parking is where you can find a legal spot after the lot is full. There's a lot of parking around the area I hear on the street. So make sure you get there and get a spot. But if you can't make it in November, that is okay. Because like I said, the last week of each month, we are going to keep doing live broadcasts from the Free Thought Library. So just make sure you keep watching this show and all the other ACA shows and go check out the website at atheist-community.org. You can get all the news and information as we expand the in-studio offerings in the future. So I know that is a freaking good time. So if you guys are free, you're going to want to be there. I hear that they often get pizza on Sundays. So, I mean, if that doesn't motivate you, I just don't know what will.
I'm sold. I want to join.
Right, right. I mean, come on, y'all. We got a couple of other calls. What? How do you feel about souls, Adam? Do you want to talk about some souls?
Yeah, it's actually a very interesting topic. So yeah,
let's do it. Let's chat with Sven in Washington. Any pronouns, Sven? How are you?
Good afternoon. How's it going?
Good. You were chatting up with Adam and Secular Rarity. What you want to talk about souls? It sounds like what about souls, man?
Yeah, Secular. I've talked to you before a couple times.
Yeah.
People may know me, but I'm pretty agnostic myself about things. But I am more driven towards a soul belief. And I was listening to a cognitive scientist talk about how artificial intelligence may be giving us more insight or evidence for souls with pattern recognition, because to humans it comes so easy to recognize certain things that we can't just tell a computer, because everything has like an infinite amount of things in common, and it's really things that they don't have in common that make us recognize it. Yeah. And so in a world of waves and constant motion, how are humans able to pick up on certain patterns? Like, what makes us recognize those patterns versus all the other patterns happening at the exact same time?
That's interesting.
That makes sense.
Kind of. I may be thinking about it a little. I guess when it comes to like pattern recognition, it seems pretty mundane to me that we would have to be able to, anything that's alive would have to have some type of pattern recognition, right? Because otherwise, like, you know, like a fish would just randomly start eating things in the ocean, and then that probably wouldn't keep it alive, right? Because it needs to eat like certain things, because otherwise, like, probably can't digest it, or, you know, maybe doesn't have teeth or something, right? So like pattern recognition in and of itself doesn't seem to me to be anything super special or anything. But maybe I'm just not understanding how pattern recognition could lead us towards understanding soul. Sven, are you still there?
Adam, did you have anything to add on as well?
Well, please, yeah.
Well, you can see lots of pattern recognition in snowflakes. Does that mean they have souls? I mean, they always form in particular shapes, very accurate and geometrically beautiful. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. I guess the preceding question is, what is a soul, and is a soul really related to patterns? It's hard to say that something exists or doesn't exist if we cannot even define what it is.
Yeah, very good. Very good point.
And its relationship to patterns.
Right. With snowflakes, I would say that I don't know if they recognize patterns. I would more put that, or in line with Platonism, it would be that, you know, all things are trying to become a perfect form of something. So everything is in a shape. And so snowflakes are trying to make a pattern. I don't know if snowflakes recognize patterns in the way that a human recognizes patterns. And that would be the distinction. Like, just because something forms a pattern doesn't mean that it's recognizing that pattern. Like,
okay.
Philosophy is the ability for humans to think about thinking. And so it's like what makes us able to process and label these patterns, while at the same time there's an infinite amount of patterns happening around.
Let's go to your understanding of what a soul is, because I think Adam had a really good point when he said we need at least some kind of basic structure for the three of us to kind of talk about this more. So when you think of a soul, what exactly, I mean, give me some properties of it that we can kind of, you know, suss out and play with.
Some properties. It exists in the aether. In Platonism, you know, a soul is something that you're born with, because if you were a soul before and then you fell asleep to come here and you're wakening up and discovering all of these things that you knew before, it comes with innate knowledge. So the soul is, and that's why cognitive science, this is a cognitive scientist that I was listening to, because it is a lot of psychology or neuroscience involved. This is a case of psychology versus souls, but it kind of goes back to a couple claims I've heard today with like the knowledge, where does truth and knowledge come from, you know?
Okay.
Like souls are the things that give us the ability to have knowledge.
Okay. So far the two main things that I've heard, Sven, are it's something ethereal, which I think ultimately we still probably need a definition for ethereal, cuz I'm not sure what like ether is or anything. But the other thing is the other kind of property of it sort of more or less is it's the source of our knowledge. It's the ability for us to have knowledge. Is that right?
Correct.
What could we do to demonstrate that the source of our knowledge is actually a soul? Like, for instance, just real quick, I mean, because again, I know you and I have chatted before, so I know you're familiar with a handful of different neuroscientists and cognitive studies and stuff, but like generally, you know, more or less, we kind of hook some wires up on people's heads, and then we can kind of watch patterns in their brain, and then we kind of group them together, and we say things like, this seems to happen every time we show them the color blue, and then we ask somebody to like think about blue, and then like the same pattern happens, like stuff like that, you know. What kind of demonstration could we do to show that the soul is the source of the knowledge instead of, say, that squishy substance in our skulls?
I'm afraid, SR, and I feel like we've met this block before. Are you asking me for an empirical test? Because this is, you know, the philosophy of mind is armchair science. It's not a laboratory science.
Yeah, and I think that kind of is...
You accept that you exist and I exist in a reality. That's armchair science. You can't improve this thing. This is a armchair philosophy that you accept the axiom that we're in a reality.
Right, and I think this is
a laboratory experiment.
No, that's okay, Sven, because I think this is the reason that I kind of wanted to go down this route, because this is something that we were talking about earlier with our caller, who wanted to talk about how the bread actually transforms into the body of Jesus, but then we don't have any way to verify it because it can't be tested with our senses. My issue with that is that seems to be a very poor way of determining what actually is or is not happening around us. And the objection that we have to take some things without that super hardcore level of proof that we do with all the other things in the world, I don't find that to be an objection, especially if that is being objected to by somebody who also agrees with all of those things that I do, but then just adds one on top of it. If I have four things only that I can't actually prove, but with those four things, I can show a bunch of other demonstrations of stuff. If somebody else comes along and says, hey, I have those four things plus this other one, well, then I win, right? That's the whole point, because I have less unknowns like that. And if what you're saying is at the end of the day, the soul is just one of those like basic, you know, metaphysical type things that we just have to accept to move on, it seems like you and I can agree on a bunch of other stuff with just my things that we can't prove that you also agree with. So I guess what I'm saying is if there is no way to verify through empiricism, if there is no method for demonstrating that this claim is actually in reality, then shouldn't we always like not really accept that one? Isn't that kind of something that we should move on from?
I think the kind of difference is that you have those four things and then you say is in actual reality. These four things are in actual reality. And what
I don't think logic is in actual reality. I think logic is a concept that applies to reality. It's a description of what's going on. But like we can't prove that logic is real because we have to use logic to disprove logic. But I think from all our conversations, like you'd accept that. And you don't think like logic exists in some way that like, you know, my house does or this microphone or something.
Well, no, Platonism holds that there's a universe or a dimension of realms that exist. I wouldn't say that logic exists like your house and things do, because those exist in space and time. And like forms where souls will eventually go exist in an aether, a different dimension. So yeah, we would agree on everything. Like I said, the problem is you have those four things and you're satisfied with saying,
right,
this is what works to show what exists and works in our reality. But the fifth thing that philosophy of mind would bring to the table is you can, the materialist could just feel comfortable saying in this reality, but the, you know, metaphysics is going to say, well, we need to talk about what that means to be in this reality and if there, what reality even means. And so it's just a concept that I think materialists don't even want to offer any substance to just take it as an axiom and a priori. where yeah, Adam, a lot of people who are religious even are more moved by these metaphysical claims of what it means to be profound. And and I think the materialist is lacking in not wanting to have that fifth thing to the table.
Yeah, Adam, you look like you had some thoughts.
I agree to some extent with Sven about reality. I was actually going with this, but instead of reality, I was going to say, okay, two thoughts. Let me separate my thoughts into two things. One, the question itself, are we talking about could a soul exist or does a soul exist? Because if we're going to talk logic and philosophy, we're talking in the realm of could. Is it possible? But the moment we say, does it exist, if we want that kind of yes or no answer, then we have to use some sort of verification to know if something exists or not. And then the problem that goes after that is the word exist itself. When we say that it's ethereal, even the ether is how we use it in a way, or maybe because I came from an IT background, it's still physical. We can measure things ethereal. We can measure microwaves or waves that we cannot see. So when we say, does the soul exist, are we talking about some sort of a physical existence, even if we cannot see it? It doesn't have to be like the mic or the camera that I'm using, but even if it is unseen, is it ethereal, physical ethereal that we can measure? Or are we talking about something that is completely non-physical? Because the moment we say, well, it's completely non-physical and it's unmeasurable, then what does it even mean exist?
Yep.
Like we're unable to fathom that something exists. Because when we use the term exist, it's either something that you can touch and feel, or you can something that you can measure, or waves, or but when you say it exists, but it's not even of a physical nature, then what does it even mean exist?
Yeah, very good.
So these are the words that I'm battling with in my mind before I can even step into the question, what is a soul?
Yeah, and I think that's great, because that kind of goes. Oh, please go ahead, Sven.
Yes, you know, Adam, I do really love that pushback, and that's why I am. I'm not a theist, but I also will not call myself an atheist just because of the stigma with it. And that's why I focus on souls and not God beliefs, because I think just because something's unfathomable, I think it's kind of an incredulity argument. But with souls and existence, we can talk about what it means to be the human soul. I agree. Like, and I'm talking about the God, a deity, a God's, what it could mean. I think that's unfathomable because we are not living that existence, but what we are living and what we are experiencing, the qualia around us, that is something very personal. And so I don't think it's completely unfathomable to talk about what it could mean to be a soul that could go on to live in a metaphysical universe. Does that make sense? Like, I really do agree with you about claims of gods and all, like they're unfathomable because that's another reality existing outside of time and space. But
it is not the soul that is not unfathomable. It's the concept of something exists without any physicality to it,
right?
Seen or unseen. That's the part that I said it's unfathomable by the human mind. But the soul itself is, yeah, because we live, we can talk about it.
Would you say, Sven, that in your understanding of when you are using the term soul, would that be something that is non-physical, kind of like Adam was talking about, or is it physical in some way?
No, I would take a dualist. I'm pretty sure, I would take a dualist stance. And I think that's what Platonism is as well. It's a metaphysical and a non-physical entity that we are living with in this physical reality.
Yeah, and I think that is pretty much, a really good point where Adam and I both are like, hey, this is something we got to figure out first, because I really don't. I have no conception of what that could possibly mean. And that's not to say that because I can't conceive of it, it can't exist. I'm just literally saying, just the same with like the whole logic thing. It's like you can't even dispute logic without using logic. So if we accept that there are these non-physical things around us, well, then how the heck could we ever possibly, understand that? Because the only, it seems everything's physical. And if I try to push back on non-physical things, well, I have to use physical means to do it. So it seems to kind of put us in that same place. So where would you kind of push back on that? Where would that be? 'Cause it seems like it's the non-physical aspect that is kind of tripping both of us up.
Yeah, I think I would push back on that where you said it seems pretty physical. I think to me, to spiritualists around the world, to theists around the world, it doesn't just seem pretty physical. Our personal experience is what seems very, very, very profound and different than just the physical. And so for you to just say it seems physical is, it's just, it doesn't, like you said, you have to prove logic to prove logic. You have to use the physical to show physical. And so that's where the disconnect is, I think, between.
But how would you use the non-physical to demonstrate physical? Or how would you use the non-physical to demonstrate non-physical?
You would use logic to prove logic.
But logic is physical because it's, logic is physical because it's things that are firing in my brain, right? And it's a description of the things in the world around me. And I have to actually say stuff. So my vocal cords like vibrate and then they move the particles in the air. And then like this microphone does magic with it, with computers and stuff. I don't understand that. But I mean, like it would still be a physical method that I'm using to. So how would I use a non-physical method to demonstrate the non-physical or the physical?
I guess I'm not understanding that question. I think maybe the disconnect would be where mathematicians that are Platonists say that, you know, there is math in the world. Like, even without us observing it, there would be water, there would be two hydrogens and one oxygen. There wouldn't be a mind to say, hey, this is two hydrogens and one oxygen. But in the world, without the mind, there still would be a form of mathematics going on.
Sure, but that's all physical stuff, isn't it? And math at the end of the day is just a description of the physical stuff, which the description itself is then still physical, because even if it's just the thought in our head, it's just a bunch of neurotransmitters and stuff.
If I may add one word, even the word exist, when we say something, soul or not, when we say something exist, that term is physical, is measurable. So now when we say that something is non-physical, exists, that sentence in itself needs a lot of clarification.
It seems contradictory to me, is exactly where, I would just say that it seems problematic because of what the characteristics of non-physical things seem to be, right? And if one of the characteristics is that we can't perceive it with any physical methods, well, then the first question would be, well, like, what non-physical methods could we use? And if we can't come up with any non-physical methods, then we really don't have any good reason to accept these non-physical things. But Sven, we've been chatting with you a lot, man. We got a couple of other calls and we do really appreciate it. I do enjoy talking about souls, man. So always thank you so much. And I always have good calls with you, I think, Sven. We always get into some interesting chats for sure. But, I'm with you, Adam. I think implicitly when I say exist, there is some physical aspect coming to it. I have absolutely no conception of what non-physical could be. And that's a big problem. I mean, because then we're just accepting things that don't, you know, we're just accepting all kinds of claims for, you know, with no evidence, no reason, really. It's like, you know, I don't think Bigfoot exists, but I also think Bigfoot would be a physical thing if it existed. But I don't know, maybe Bigfoot has a soul. But I know that there are at least a couple of people that exist out there, because they are actually our top five patrons for this wonderful show today. And we are about to read them. If you want to support the ACA or Talk Heathen, you can do so at patreon.com/talkheathen to me. Super duper easy. And you might get your name read out on screen, whether you exist or not, actually. But number one, we've got Eric Tweet. Number two, Dingleberry Jackson. Number three, Devor Valjean. Number four, Calvetti Kalevi Helveti. Gosh, that's a twister. Number five, Justice Renee Bovey. And then our honorable mention for Jack H. Levy. So thank you, all of you, and everyone that donates with us on Patreon. It means a lot. And I will take the bold stance that you all exist. You are physical. You do exist. No ether required. But
faith at its best.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Let's talk about, let's talk about Jesus a little. We haven't done that yet, have we, Adam?
We haven't.
Let's go talk with Bruce, he, him in Arizona, wants to talk about a lack of contemporary recordings for Jesus. How are you, Bruce?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
Oh, pretty good. Great. Pretty good. What are your thoughts on this, on the lack of recordings, the lack of contemporary stuff for Jesus?
Well, I've been having discussions with some theists lately, and I'm running into sort of a brick wall in that I make the assertion that there are no contemporaneous writings of Jesus in existence. And because that's what I've heard on your show, but it strikes me that I really don't know that there are not. And they are also saying that there are. Discussion that I was having just 2 days ago, they were saying that Luke was witnessed Jesus's existence, and I didn't really know how to refute it.
Luke, from my understanding, Luke is one of the oldest, is one of the furthest away from Jesus. John being a little bit more. But Adam, do you know anything about this and whether or not there are contemporary accounts? Was somebody walking around with a pen and paper at Jesus's time recording what he said, Adam? That's what I have been told.
Okay, so I did a degree in biblical studies and textual criticism, so I do have a few notes here. So yes, Luke did not meet Jesus in person. Luke was the companion of Paul, and even Paul himself admits in his epistles that he did not meet Jesus in person. So he's not a contemporary in that sense. However, I think what people refer to as an evidence in Luke is that at the very start of Luke, he says the first four verses that there have been a lot of people writing stories about Jesus, and I wanted to write my own account of the story. So it is used that, say, Luke is saying here that there are a lot of contemporaries, a lot of people from the time of Jesus writing accounts. Do we have these accounts? No, we don't. It seems like at some point there were some contemporary people writing accounts of Jesus. Once upon a time, it existed. Anything else? The three other Gospels are supposed to be contemporary: Matthew, Mark, and John. Matthew and John, because they were disciples of Jesus, and Mark was a companion. but all this information is coming from church tradition, so we don't really, really know that the Gospel of John, for instance, was written by John the disciple, one of the 12 who lived with Jesus at the time. It's a tradition. They say, do we know if that was a contemporary account or not? We don't know that, and there is no evidence for it whatsoever, other than the word of the church.
Yeah.
So this is just basically an unfalsifiable assertion.
Well, we can falsify it in the sense that the earliest manuscripts and things that we have date not to the supposed time of Jesus, right? Even at their best, at their absolute, granting them as much latitude and leeway as we can possibly give. If I remember correctly, the closest thing to Jesus's life were the letters of Paul. And even those letters were about 20 to 30 years after he supposedly died. And he never met him. That's something Paul makes very clear. I never met Jesus, and here's all the stuff I know about Jesus. So yeah, go ahead.
I understand all that, but my question is, what talking point do I use to make that clear to the person that I'm having the dialogue with? Mm. You know, I can say, well, okay, the earliest Gospels were at least 20 to 30 years after Jesus's death. But then how do I prove that?
You could, and I don't have any people off the top of my head, so I do apologize for that. But you could go research some of the biblical archaeology that we've actually done. I can definitely tell you one thing that was super helpful for myself is this really super cool book called The Atheist Handbook to the Old Testament, Volume 1. There is a second one that is out. It's by this awesome Assyriologist, Dr. Josh Bowen. He's a very intelligent person. That isn't exact, his area of expertise isn't exactly like, you know, digging around Jerusalem or anything, but one of the things that he does is he talks about how, you know, archaeology really started. And he gives you kind of a look at biblical archaeology, especially, which, you know, for a while, back in the late 1800s was literally, you know, the phrase was, you know, a Bible in one hand and a pick in the other, because people were actively going out there to find things that would confirm their theological understanding and how their, you know, approach to the Bible was. The issue has been for those people, as we have continued to develop this field, as we have continued to make this more and more scientific and objective, all of those claims continually get proven false. Every single time they came out and they said, oh, we found the walls of Jericho. We found the walls of Jericho. And so that must mean that this was true. They walked around and they blew their trumpets and yada. Oops. See, here's the thing is, because when we looked at it again, we actually did some dating and we did some more digging and found out that probably at the time when the story of the Battle of Jericho was written, probably that city had been abandoned for a few hundred years already. So battle really didn't happen as much as like we just took over this destroyed city. So my suggestion, Bruce, would definitely be just go out there and you know, try and have some of those talking points in the sense of like they say, oh, well, Luke was a companion of Jesus. And then you go, ah, actually, we did this archaeological dig back in 1999 and this was the person that was a part of it. And as a devout Christian, they say Luke actually wasn't around then. It wasn't until like the 90s or something. So hopefully some of that helps, Bruce. Is any of that a good starting point at the very least?
A reference where I can go and read up on it is just what I was looking for.
Yeah, that is definitely a great place. The channel that Dr. Josh and his wife Megan run, they're both incredibly intelligent and they bring on lots of scholars, and that may be a good place to get just some of that stuff compiled really easily for you. So hopefully that helps, Bruce. And thanks so much for giving us a call.
Yeah, thanks guys. I appreciate you. Bye.
Yeah, you have a good one, man. Yeah, we were talking about this before, Adam, how it's funny that there's all these, you know, Muslim apologists out there who talk about, you know, oh, well, the Bible can't be reliable because it was written so far after when Jesus was alive. But what are some of the oldest, do you know, some of the oldest books or manuscripts that we have for the Quran? Were they contemporary to Muhammad?
Not contemporary, but we have things within 50, 60 years after the death of the prophet.
Which it's about the same time. I mean, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Kinda. Yeah. It seems, I don't know. I'm going to go out on a limb here, Adam. I'm going to say neither of these are super reliable. I mean, I know it's crazy, but I don't know. It doesn't sound good.
I agree with you. I totally agree. And not only the manuscripts, but there is the hadith, the stories and the tradition that was compiled like 200 years after the prophet.
Yeah.
They give us a lot of stories about how the Quran was compiled. And even in that, there is a lot of question marks and how the Quran was compiled and how it was transmitted to us, and conflicting stories, and it's a very interesting mess.
Yeah. And hey, you know, good thing the Quran is so unambiguous and clear, right? Well, we've got,
thank God.
Yeah, right. We've got one more call to take today. It looks like we're going to head over to Oregon. We got Christopher, him. You are chatting up with Secular Rarity and Adam L. Mastery. What's going on, Christopher?
Hi, Adam. Hi, Secular Rarity. Nice to talk to y'all. Well, I guess this is, to me, a question that's never been really asked before. And I could give an analogy first or make the position or question, but basically I think word integrity is really important. I think it's incredibly important that the words we use are honest. And what I found is that if you say you love Jesus and you say you love God and you say you love the Bible, I think it'd be really important that you'd read the entire book, every word on every page, before you died. I mean, I don't understand the integrity of your word choice, the integrity of your beliefs. If you truly believe this is the word of God, wouldn't you take the time within your lifetime to read every word on every page? But yet, as we all know, the vast majority of folks, they're going to go to their graves never having read the Bible. And it's alarming.
I can tell you, Christopher, when I was a believer, I was very devout in my belief in a little bit of a different sense than I think the majority of people on this show or other shows talk about when they say they were devout. What I meant when I said that was that every fiber of my being felt this intense emotional connection to this being, right? I didn't feel like I needed to read through the scriptures and make sure that I was being consistent with how God was portrayed because I could feel God. I didn't need to go ask a priest what their thought was because I had thoughts. I had God inside me. And for me,
go ahead. Sorry.
No, please.
To me, with all due respect to you, I don't think that sounds empty to me.
Yeah.
Here's the thing is
well hang on just a second, Christopher, because I think you're right there, which is, yeah, it is kind of empty in the sense that I really didn't have any reason to justify that belief that I had. But that is how a lot of us have beliefs, right? And so at the end of the day, it even on things that I may agree with people, right? Like somebody comes up to me and they say, hey, you know, I really believe that medical decisions should be left between a doctor and their patient, specifically like abortion. I just think that should be something that we can access. And I go, yeah, I totally agree with that. And they go, yeah. And the reason that I believe that is because I threw a bunch of forks in the air one day. And when they fell on the ground, they said, legalize abortion. And now that's a bad freaking reason. I mean, I'm glad you're on to the same conclusion that I am. But I think honestly that it's just that at the end of the day, we all have some bad reasons. We have that bad critical thinking and bad epistemology a lot of times. And even those of us that have stepped away from religion, right? And so while I may agree that yes, it's a more robust faith, the way that you're portraying it, I don't think it's something that's like prescribed, so to speak, right? Like you can be an atheist.
Yeah, I wish it was.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, I'm with you. I wish more religious people would read their books. They'd see all the terrible things in them. Well, I'm right there with you.
Here's I'll give you two short analogies on why I'm still not buying it. And one of them's a quick one. Or both of them are. Let's say I say I'm a huge Beatles fan. And then you know, Adam or Secularity, you say, oh, well, what's your favorite album? And I say to you, well, I have never listened to anything but the greatest hits. Mm-hmm. Immediately, you would think to yourself, well, you don't really love the Beatles that much. I mean, you're going to go to your grave not actually listen to a single Beatles album. And on the same, that's one analogy, essentially. Another one is, if someone were to ask me or you, hey, have you read, I don't know, Dandelion Wine by Ray Bradbury, the answer to that question is going to be either yes or no.
True.
But yet, so often when people are asked if they've read the Bible, they say yes, but we all know they haven't. They haven't. Yeah.
They've read bits and pieces.
So what they have is cliff notes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Real quick though, okay. And then I want to get Adam's thoughts, Christopher. But
sure. Yes.
Are you familiar with the no true Scotsman fallacy? Right. Just that.
Right.
Regular around these parts. If somebody tells you that they are a Christian and you say, oh, well, you know, have you read the whole Bible or do you do this particular thing? Right. And they go, well, no, but I'm a Christian. And then somebody says to them, oh, well, you're not a real Christian. Right. Because you don't, you know, you haven't actually read the whole Bible and stuff. That puts us in that boat of doing that particular fallacy. And while again, I agree that, you know, in the most beautifulest of possible worlds that exists out there, every single belief that everyone holds in the entirety of existence, all of us would be investigating that and having good reason. And, you know, before we say that we're fans of this show, we actually watch it. Or before we say that we believe in this thing, we actually, you know, read the damn book or whatever. I would agree that is probably the loftiest of best worlds we could have. Unfortunately, the world that we live in is one where the vast majority of us accept things without super great reason. I think
we could call each other out on it.
Well, and that's exactly where I was going to go, Christopher, is I think what you're saying is we need to make sure that those of us that have the ability to, we stand up and voice the value of critical thinking, that we voice the value of skepticism and saying, hey man, is it really fair for you to say that you believe this when when, you know, you haven't even read it? Like, come on, let's read it together. Yeah. Let's look at it. But yeah, but before I just continue rambling for another 30 minutes, Adam, give us some thoughts here.
It's not only believe, like when they say, I love Jesus, or I love the Bible. What comes to my mind is a philosophical or a poetic take on love that I listened once.
Yeah.
Interestingly, it was by a Jewish rabbi. He was saying, when you say, I love fish, and then you go and do fishing and you get the fish and then you cook it. Basically, you kill it and you burn it and then you eat it. That doesn't mean I love fish. You love the taste of fish. Mm. And correct. Same thing. Yeah. Well, he goes, when you love flowers and then you pick them and do a bunch, that's not loving flower. That's a selfish way of loving the thing. But if you love something, yeah, you got to nourish it. And so it was very interesting. And so I agree with you, basically, because when you say I love something, if you never experienced every part of it extensively, then you cannot say I love it. You can say I love the bits, I love the pieces of wisdom that I read or cherry pick every day.
Yeah.
But you cannot say I love the Bible in its totality because you never experienced its totality. So yeah, I'm with you guys.
That should be humiliating, I think.
Yeah, I think we should all want to have good justification for the things that we believe, especially if we're going to go around talking about them, you know. But again, I think.
I kind of have a question for Adam, because the reason this question's come up to me, and it started about 5 years ago, is because what I've noticed when I'm debating religious folks, I find that more Muslims have actually read the Quran than Christians, and I think the disparity is massive. And so I find that when I'm debating Muslims, I'm at least debating somebody who I feel like on a intellectual basis, we're being honest, they know the material, they can discuss the material. But when I'm debating Christians, they deflect all over themselves. I mean, it's just an abomination on communicating with them. And that's why I feel it's important. Hey, if you really believe, and I'm not questioning their Christianity, I'm questioning that they truly believe it. That's the word I'm hung up on. I feel like if you have that much love, the least you could do is read that only book where these characters occur in. I mean, within your lifetime, not today, tomorrow, but like before you die. So
I agree with you,
Adam, do you agree that Muslims seem to know the Quran better than Christians tend to know the Bible, or is that just my own personal observation?
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. Muslims, the majority of them, they read the entire Quran more than once, and a lot of them memorize chunks of it.
So
you're absolutely right. And even Muslims who are not native Arabic speakers, they still read, they have to read the Quran in Arabic together with an English translation. You cannot just go and read the English translation.
Yeah.
So, they take it to a completely different level. There is no comparison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find that to be more sincere to me, a sincere use of the word belief when I'm talking to people that have actually digested the text, the holy text they claim to be holy. I mean, I don't know, it's mind-boggling to me. It's so frustrating to me when people approach me, call me on the phone or come to my door claiming they have these beliefs, and when I ask them if they've read their own Jehovah's Witness, their Bible, the Mormon, all of it, it's like, no, they haven't. I'm like, oh my gosh, why are you here? Go home and read it. Leave me alone until you've finished.
Well, Christopher, I think Adam and I are pretty much, you know, right on side with you when it comes to especially those that are in religious belief systems. We want them to be familiar with what they believe and what they profess to believe. So you hang out here at least for this episode, Christopher. So hopefully you are joining us and promoting critical thinking and skepticism wherever you can. So
I do, and I've been listening for 12 years, and this is my first time calling. It's just been boiling up inside me for so long, and I love y'all. I was an atheist when I first started listening, but y'all have turned me into skeptics, and reasonable person, and so I try really hard to use my words correctly, and I have y'all to thank for it, everybody who's involved with the ACA, and so y'all really mean a lot to me, and I know a lot of other people, and I appreciate every moment y'all volunteer of this. It's just amazing.
Well, thank you so much. Man. Yeah, we really appreciate that, Christopher. I know it's that type of stuff that keeps us all, you know, doing this. It's very, very valuable that we all evaluate our beliefs on a regular basis. And actually, you know, that leads us right into a good segue, I think, Adam, because you have a bunch of stuff out there that can help people with their critical thinking and skepticism. Where can people find all this great stuff that you do?
If you are an English speaker, it's Adam and Masri English channel on YouTube. And if you are an Arabic speaker, then it's Adam and Masri without the Arabic channel. It's just Adam and Masri. You will find a lot of Arabic speaking material. These are my two main channels.
Easy, easy. You have a website too, right?
I do. It's adamandmasri.online.
Easy. Folks, it's easy. He made it easy for you. So go out there and go check out all this great stuff. And, you know, why not comment below that you want Adam back on more often? We always love having super cool guests. So, Adam, seriously, thank you. I had such a fun freaking time today. And I will no longer be swayed by these I don't know Arabic responses, because now I have somebody I can call that can give me the proper translation.
So. Thank you so much. And thank you for having me. Thanks for the opportunity. And thanks for everyone who is listening right now or will listen to us in the future as a recorded episode.
Absolutely. And just as a reminder for all you wonderful folks, if you enjoyed this show, you enjoy the stuff that we've got going on, there are a bunch of freaking ways you can help us out. We've got a fundraiser right below the live chat. 100% of those proceeds go directly to the ACA. YouTube does not charge any fees. Just like the video, like and subscribe already. It's so freaking easy. It takes absolutely nothing. Doesn't cost you a single dime. And why not share it too? It's, again, really easy. You just copy a link, you put out something on Twitter while that platform's still around. Who knows if it'll be here tomorrow? So why not just go ahead and get your last tweet in? But also, you can become a member of this awesome channel and get all kinds of super cool perks, and including those super duper sweet chat emotes. You just hit the join button below the video. You can go over to Patreon at tiny.cc/patreonth, and we might read your name out on the show. Plus, you can also go find us at tiny.cc/AEN podcast. It is the place that houses all of the awesome ACA shows in audio podcast form only. So if you don't want to see the video, you just want to hear the audio, you sure can do that at tiny.cc/AEN podcast. You can also hang out with the Talk Heathen fans and the community in the fan run Facebook page at tiny.cc/FBTHG. And I promise we're almost done, folks. I am going to be hanging out in the ACD, that is the Discord, fan run Discord for the ACA, after this show, tiny.cc/ACA Discord. I will be hanging out there until 3 p.m. Central Time today, because that is when the new episode of the flagship ACA show, the nonprofits, appear. So you can find that at tiny.cc/YTNP. And you know we got to do this. You know we got to say thanks to some of the awesomest, coolest, greatest, fantasticest. Okay, I think that was enough. I think that was enough adjectives. It's in the contract. But we have the wonderful crew. Can we see those beautiful faces? Look at our crew. They are amazing, amazing. They look like they're not excited because I'm not wrapping up fast enough. That's my fault, and I will have a stern talking to afterwards. But we might be able to. We just might be able to get some love rings going if we do it. If we get it, oh my gosh, we got them. And we are sending the love to absolutely everybody out there, because thank all of you, the viewers that are hanging out with us today or in the future. Whether or not you believe, we're just glad that we're able to have a space where we can all gather and have fun and push back respectively. If you are still out there as an essential worker and you're putting yourself on the front lines, thank you so much. We are desperately hoping that we will be through this terrible, terrible pandemic and be able to actually go back to living our lives normally. And we know that you are the biggest part of that. And we are going to do our part. We are going to do our best to make sure that we are getting vaccinated. We are getting boosted. We are wearing masks. We are doing the things that we need to do because we are not out yet. But we can get there. We can get back to that normalcy that we are all looking for. And if you don't believe, that's awesome, because here's a good spot for you. We get to hang out. We get to come together all the time. And you know all the great stuff you can find here in this community. So help us grow. Share it out to some other people that you know. And if you got a buddy that may be questioning, or maybe you have a friend that's devoutly religious, you know, and you still think it's a good idea to have some conversation and some pushback, well, this is a great place to do it. So just get out there and just spread the word, folks. I mean, that being said, if you do believe, we don't hate you. We're just not convinced.
We want the truth, so watch Truth Wanted live Friday at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTTW and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callTW.